and welcome to Unquestionably Nerdy, the show where we talk about everything that makes us want to geek out, freak out, and eke out as much nostalgia-based profit as we can from our loyal followers. I am one of your hosts, Kata MacArthur, and whom am I joined by?
Apparently the last few times it's been no one, but...
No, what are you talking about?
I would say, luckily, I was freed from Caden's basement. He had me locked up the past 3 weeks, but as you guys got from this intro, he needed me back in order to get all of this profit from our loyal followers.
No, it's a profit. I bought all the followers, Cole.
I don't know what he's talking about, but either way, I'm back, baby. It is Cole, the best color commentator, and as Caden now realizes, his best friend, who he does need for this podcast.
No. Well, I was going to say welcome back, but you basically done it yourself. Well.
I'm glad to be back.
Did you learn anything on your misadventures? Not in my basement?
I've learned that the moon is a rough place.
Oh, good. Well, Cole, I certainly hope you had some sort of Wi-Fi connection on said moon, because for this episode, we're going to be talking about Disney. Do you have Disney on the moon, Cole?
You would be surprised. There is a premium tier to Disney Plus that is Disney Plus Plus Plus. There's two more tiers that you didn't know. So Disney Plus is the Earth one. The satellite orbits around the Earth, you need Disney Plus Plus. And the moon is where you need Disney Plus Plus Plus. So luckily, only for about $150 a month, I got Disney Plus Plus Plus.
What a steal. I mean, if you're going to get entertainment on the moon.
Oh, fantastic pricing.
I'm sort of surprised. I had figured that sort of waxing moon was more of a DreamWorks area, you know?
See, you would think, but DreamWorks just hasn't had that money to get to the moon since Shrek. They've tried.
They've tried. Disney has also tried, and Disney has tried in many different ways. One recent way Disney has successfully been making reliable box office returns is with their live-action remakes. Are you familiar? Did you watch any of those on the moon?
I wouldn't subject myself to those on the moon. I watched them back on Earth. No. But I don't know what to think of what's going to go on today. I'm afraid of what live-action remakes you're going to bring up.
Well, I don't know if we need much of an intro. The Disney live-action remakes are, of course, you know, Disney taking their old classics and remaking them in live-action, adapting them from animated versions to live-action versions. Questionably so in some regards, like the quote-unquote live-action Lion King, but we'll get to that later. But it's a hot topic. The Moana trailer came out not too long ago, and the live-action Moana trailer will come out later this year. So I've figured, you know, why not dive into our thoughts on how the live-action remakes have treated us so far? Because the Moana trailer, we have opinions.
The Moana trailer, I feel like, is held back by whatever sort of wig they decided to attach to the Rock's head.
Yeah, which must mean it's a very weak hold, because it's not a good wig.
Yeah,
The Rock does not look good. The Rock does not look natural with hair. He always looks good. He's a handsome man, but he doesn't look natural.
No, and the one, I'm not even sure if it showed us this in the trailer or not, but I'm super skeptical of the chicken, man.
If they replaced Alan Tudyk, I will be upset.
Why would they ever replace Alan Tudyk? He's like, Alan Tudyk is
God's gift to man.
God's gift to man, but also you have Ming-Na Wen and Robert Downey Jr. and I think Jon Favreau, who won like this like triple crown of Disney franchises award a few years back.
True.
If Alan Tudyk does not win some sort of Disney Lifetime Achievement Award for how much money this man has made them, I will stage a riot. Alan Tudyk is at least 1% of the entire reason that Disney has all of its profits. And considering that one man makes up 1% of your profits, that's pretty big of a company of, like, thousands.
Yeah. I was going to make a joke about it, but honestly, I feel like we could do a whole episode on Alec Tudyk and his films and his shows and etc.
I could do an entire episode just on Tucker and Dale versus Evil, one of the greatest horror movies to have ever been made, especially in that era of trying to be subversive with horror. I'm up for the debate on it. Tucker and Dale versus Cabin in the Woods. I think we could do an entire episode on that. But again,
interesting.
That just shows you one of the best horror movies of all time, Alan Tudyk, K2SO, the guy from Frozen, King Candy, Wreck-It Ralph. He's printing money. So no, they better not replace him as the frickin' chicken.
No. Well, we can hope for the future, but for the time being, for the present moment, we can look back on the past and then look back on the live-action films from Disney, the live-action remakes we've gotten so far. I feel like we can go... I have several notes on several of them, and I feel like we can go through at least a couple of them, the ones we've both seen, one by one. Cole, figure we can start out with live-action Aladdin. Thoughts?
I have seen hot takes on the live-action Aladdin, especially because of Will Smith's genie kind of seems to be the big one.
Yes.
To be honest, I really enjoyed the live-action Aladdin. I felt like it was an enjoyable film. I don't really think that you could ever match up with Robin Williams.
No.
But I do think Will Smith didn't try to copy that vibe as much. He just took...
No, I agree.
He just kind of took the vibe of, what if the Fresh Prince was magical?
He's just playing Will Smith.
Yeah, so I got to applaud him because playing Will Smith the genie worked.
Okay. I can't necessarily agree. I feel like the genie was the main talking point before, during, and after the movie came out. And I agree in the fact that he is just full-blown Will Smith in his genie performance, which I guess kind of makes sense because Robin Williams' genie is just full-on dialed up to 11 Robin Williams, so I guess it kind of makes sense that Smith would do himself dialed up to 11. But I just didn't think it worked. The Smith genie does want to be different from the Williams genie, but in so much of it, I feel like he just comes off as a dick. Like, what the fuck does he have against Abu? He makes fun of Abu so much, and like when he's first introduced, instead of like immediately having fun with Aladdin, to compare it to the animated version, instead of, like, immediately having fun with Aladdin, where he's making jokes and doing impressions and whatever, Genie just immediately doesn't give a shit about him. It then, ironically, does not make him sound much of a friend like me.
I mean, okay, I get that argument.
He's too cool. He's playing it too cool, so where he doesn't give a shit about Aladdin.
I mean, I think there is a difference. Because the live action remakes are best served when they aren't exactly copying the animated version.
Right.
Basically step by step. And I think part of what makes me more okay with Will Smith's version, even though it doesn't exactly fit the song, is that I felt like it at least had a bit of character growth by the end of the movie that wasn't present in the animated version. Like the animated version, I would say Robin Williams' genie throughout the entire movie is basically just static chaos. Amazingly funny static chaos. But if you're talking about basically like story tropes of dynamic versus static characters, I would say he was more static in the animated version than he was in the live action.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, Genie doesn't really go through any character arc or learn anything. He's just in support. He's just having fun with Aladdin. He becomes friends with Aladdin. He, like, gets pissed at Aladdin when Aladdin doesn't want to free him, but then he's back on Team Aladdin when Al comes back to fight Jafar and whatever in the animated version. But you're, like, saying he softens on Aladdin over time?
Yeah, I think he definitely does in the live-action version.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is, you know, a unique way to adapt it so it doesn't feel exactly like the animated film. Yeah. Also the fact of Will Smith's genie kind of being an ass at first and softening. His, like, banter in the movie with Nassim Pedrad, who, I don't know if you know this, Nassim Pedrad was on SNL for a while. She played, why can't I think of the main girl's name? Jasmine. She played, like, Jasmine's best friend.
Yeah.
Or, like, consort kind of thing. But no, her and, like,
means, like, lover.
Yeah. But yeah, so Nassim Pedrad and Will Smith had, like, a lot of banter between their characters because it was basically Aladdin's best friend, Jasmine's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of implied they get together at the end of the movie.
I mean, they have kids at the end of the movie.
That's what it was.
And the start of the movie.
But yeah, so I honestly really just like that banter. And that is, I think, the thing that sticks with me is just a really good kind of, like, I wouldn't call it a full side story, but just something not pivotal to the main story.
Sure.
That, like, a live action movie was able to do differently and still make it a good part of the movie. Like, it didn't, I wouldn't say it detracted from anything. I think it only added.
Yeah. And I feel like the Will Smith genie getting more to do and having more interactions outside of it, just as interactions with Aladdin, is, I feel like it's got to be a symptom of Will Smith's star power at the time, less nowadays, but at the time, compared to, like, Robin Williams didn't want to, like, force any star power on the original animated film. Like, he was very pushy on, not pushy, but, like, he was very in the boat of, don't use my name to market the film, don't use, like, the genie character to market the film, because he wanted to make it for his kids and blah blah, etc. And then he got pissed off at Disney when they made all the marketing around Robin Williams and the genie. But I feel like this is a moment of Will Smith is on screen, we got to give him more to do than just interactions with this singular character in Aladdin.
I would say Will Smith was the only person with star power
basically
in that movie. I would say it's a problem with live action films in general, but it's hard to market live action films specifically without kind of that major star power. Like, I feel like it's a lot easier to market animated films without the star power.
Yeah, and going back to what you were saying about the getting people in the theaters and persuading them to come and just starting from scratch on how do you portray these films? How do you adapt these films? Do you make them the exact same? Like with the live action How to Train Your Dragon, which is not Disney, but it's a terrible movie. Do you do it the exact same, or do you try and do something different, try some doing something new? And to give the slightest amount of credit to the live action, to all of these live action remakes, I feel like it is a case of damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you venture too far off of the story and characters that people know, people are going to be kissed because it's not recognizable to the story they enjoy. But if you do it the exact same, you know, cinema snobs like me are going to complain you're just doing nothing original and just taking a script and putting in live action rather than on animation.
I mean, I feel like there's two ways to kind of take the remakes in general. Is either they add something to the vibe of the original, or they change the vibe completely. And kind of one that I know is probably going to get mentioned later is Disney's Mulan,
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the remake.
Like, I feel like that's the example where it is the biggest jump in style.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was a change in completely the vibe. But I think that Aladdin was one that decided to keep roughly the same vibe, mm-hmm. but to add things.
Yeah. Touch. Go more on that. What did you think of the changes that they did make?
I honestly didn't really have any problems with the changes. I mean, it's hard for me to think of really any obvious changes right now. It's been a while since I've seen it, but like, I can't think of anything that stood out to me. And I was like, I was pissed off that this wasn't like the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing that angered me. Everything that was changed, either I didn't notice or I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. The main, honestly, like the differences I spotted, I wasn't really a fan of any of them. Like, it to me, it starts out as immediately more boring, where in the animated version, we start off with a fun song, maybe a little culturally insensitive song at start of the animated version. But at the start of this one, it's just Will Smith trying to play it casual on his boat with his kids and his wife and telling them a story, and it's a weird intro. But like, then you've got other changes, like the Game of Thrones-ification of more modern kind of stuff after the Game of Thrones has become popular. Like, they tried to add like the political elements into the story. Like, one of the reasons Jafar wants to influence the Sultan more is so that they go and invade this other foreign nation next to Agrabah. But, like, trying to make that story on a larger scale, they just end up doing the opposite in making it way more vague and less character-driven. Like, Jafar wants to become Sultan because he's power-hungry and not because he's, like, trying to put on this face of some political player. Which I also found ironic, considering they're trying to, like, play into, like, the Game of Thrones politics, you know, secrecy, deception, whatever, political drama type stuff. But they're also so passive on the end when Jafar wishes to be Sultan, and nobody just steps in and acts like, hey, no, actually, we're still loyal to that guy, even though the big blue wish-granter guy says you're Sultan. And they still call Jasmine princess, even though she shouldn't be a princess because her father's not Sultan anymore.
I don't know. I kind of like the political part.
You would.
You know for a fact that I don't like most political things. And that at certain points, Game of Thrones is hard for me to watch. But I don't feel like the political part overtook the movie.
No.
Right? I feel like it's one of those things that was added, and you're like, why is Jafar evil? Kind of thing. And I feel like this has to do more with the idea that the movie was marketed, I think, more towards people that had seen the original. And that those people who'd seen the original as kids were probably people in their 20s and 30s at this point.
Certainly.
And I think at that point, we want a movie that's a bit more sophisticated. Not like a complex plot, but of if there was a story beat that just didn't have enough information, they're like, how can we just add the little bit of information to basically just make the story clearer? And I don't feel like anything that they really changed with that, like that political part or the motivations, detracted at all from the movie. And I think that's one thing that I'll take going into all the other movies, is that I was never a really huge Disney fan growing up. I see previous episodes, you guys will all see our Cartoon Network episode and like animated DC shows. Those are my jam. So I don't really have this fanatic sense of, oh, you're taking away from something that built my childhood kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for me to be like, oh yeah, these changes ruined this movie. I'm going into these first and foremost of, were they a good movie? And still surprisingly, even giving that somewhat lower bar, Disney can still fuck it up.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just found, not to keep harping on the politics side, like the political element they wanted to add. I don't know. I just felt like it wasn't, if you're not gonna, it's so vague and so nothing kind of moment that it doesn't add anything to it. And if it doesn't add anything to it, it shouldn't be there at all kind of thing. But like outside of that, like, I don't know. It just felt less fun.
I think part of that is Robin Williams.
Certainly.
I was going to say, take Robin Williams out of the original animation and put someone just as funny in there as the genie. I don't think that movie would even come to 80% of what it would have been with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the fun came from the genie, and I guess that does detract a bit from Will Smith, but I still think that they were able to bring the fun in other characters that weren't the genie in the live-action remake, which, even if it may not have been enough, still improved upon the original. So I'm not saying that the live action is better overall. I'm just saying there are things that I think that the live action did do better.
I can recognize some fun parts of it. Like, there's the backstory of Jafar, played by Marwan Kanzari. Like, he's a former thief, and he's like, pitching to Aladdin of like the idea of like proving yourself, that you're proving you're more than your background kind of thing. That's fine. The scene relating to Aladdin is equally fine. The Mena Masood as Aladdin is mostly fine, and he seems to have a fun time with the Friend Like Me number. The Prince Ali number is pretty fun, even though why the fuck isn't Aladdin riding Elephant Abu? He's just on a fucking float. What, like, come on, that, why?
I mean, yeah.
I do, look, and there's like, I feel like even if it's unnecessary, the Kaiju Iago at the end is a pretty neat replacement for Snake Jafar. That being said, it is hurt by the fact that Iago is basically not a fucking character in this version. Which makes his fucking punishment of getting trapped in the lamp at the end feel so pointless. Like, he doesn't do shit until Sorcerer Jafar turns him into Kaiju Parrot mode and sends him to, like, get the fucking lamp back. And I don't know why the fuck during that entire chase sequence they just don't use a wish on the lamp to solve all the problems.
I have no idea. Okay, so I did think of one thing, though, that did take away from the live-action one.
Okay.
I'm just going to talk about Prince Anders. Like, yes. Billy Magnuson's basically, like, Frozen character that just kind of shows up. I honestly just don't get why he's there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know that kind of, there was a huge hype, I think, at the time about, like, oh, they're whitewashing this, and... You know, I don't even really think that's the biggest part of the issue. I think it's honestly, I've just never seen like these Disney animated or live action films as being a part of like a connected universe. I'm like, oh, no. The land of Aladdin is not on the same earth as the land of Frozen or the land of Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty or whatever. I just see them all.
People like to make those fan theories, but yeah.
I just see them all as very self-contained. Yeah. So I think for me, I guess it was weird seeing the one white guy in the movie. But
fair.
More for the fact of like, I honestly don't believe that there's anything outside of small Middle East desert land that Aladdin's in. Like, they've never talked about going outside of this or anything else.
Well, they, like in Whole New World in the original, they fly around Greece and go to China and stuff.
Did they really? It's been so long.
Yeah. I was about to ask.
Well, take back everything I said then.
Well, there you go. I did have like a similar question. I didn't recognize that it was Billy Magnussen when I first watched the movie, and I wrote down, where the fuck did they find the actor for this Scandinavian prince guy?
It is Billy Magnussen, which is a disappointment because I love other things that man has been in.
I like Billy Magnussen. I mean, I don't know what he was doing here.
He's a great actor. I honestly just don't think that the role should have been in the movie. I don't think it brought anything except for almost like a laugh track.
Yeah, it was very bad sitcom kind of insert laughter here kind of moment anytime he was on screen.
Which, speaking of having random star power in the suitor for a very important princess or even say a queen, it is my ultimate fear that Robert Pattinson's, who does he play in The Odyssey? If it's not Telemachus is the name of the suitor, that may be the name of the son.
Son.
Well, then I don't know the name of the suitor. Either way, it is my fear that this Billy Magnussen, Prince Anders idea of basically a laugh track suitor will just be Robert Pattinson in The Odyssey. And if it is, I think I'm just going to have to take down the live-action Aladdin further in my favor, because I will have blamed it on ruining Christopher Nolan's Odyssey.
I refuse to believe that it can be ruined, and I'm very excited for it.
I am ready for that movie to be ruined. I'm not sure by what.
Shut up!
But I have so little faith.
I have a little faith in you. But I feel like that's some extensive notes on Aladdin. Cole, what did you think overall about the live-action Mulan?
It didn't go hard enough.
Didn't go hard enough. You wanted it to like go further in a particular direction.
Yes, I wanted it to go further away from the animated Mulan.
Go on.
It was about 75 to 80% of the Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon that I wanted.
It was definitely going in that direction. It's to some degree, yeah.
It kept the vibe of a Disney movie because it had to. And I think part of what kind of detracted from it, which I know we've kind of mentioned to each other at some point, is just the cinematography in some of these live-action movies can make or break the film.
Yeah.
And
I do have a note for live-action Mulan. It seems like this combat might have some nice choreography. I wish I was able to tell around all of these quick shots.
Yeah, there was, I think, a chance to show off more martial arts in the movie, especially because you had Donnie Yen and Jet Li in this movie.
Oh my god.
Like, how can you have Donnie Yen and Jet Li in this movie and not do more epic martial arts?
Donnie Yen at least gets something to do. Jet Li just sits around, and that is a crime.
All Jet Li did at one point was basically just say, "You think you can stop me with drapes? Wrong. My martial arts form captured. Is drapes."
And then he gets captured.
He really does.
Ugh. I can almost see this being like a respectful thing to Jet Li to like make him the emperor. Like he is one of the Chinese action stars, so you put him in like the role with the most power, but he doesn't do shit.
I mean, the emperor could have at least put up more of a fight. Like the emperor could have got his shit rocked by the Huns.
Yeah.
And then Mulan comes in, fights her ass off, gets her shit rocked, and then only through the power of ki is she able to say, "Guess what? I'm channeling the magic in my body, which you don't have," and then absolutely crush the enemy. Like, that was kind of more of the thing of like, oh yes, she has magical abilities almost because of this innate just power in one's body.
My God.
And I don't feel like it ever got as epic as it could have been. Like, we saw epic moments of her basically just doing crazy kicks while flying and basically twirling about like an acrobat.
Yeah.
But, like, I felt like the martial arts should have been, like, 80% of her ki ability. And then, like, the actual ability itself should have been, like, 150%.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I'm going to start off by saying I don't know shit about chi, I think is what they call it. I think it's the term they use in the film.
I was just going to say, there's multiple different ways it's to pronounce it. But yes, it's basically
chi, etc.
It's basically this essence within you. It's chi, ki, or ki. Q-I, yeah. K-I, or C-H-I.
Yeah. I don't know shit about ki, but every mention of it in this movie feels like a very Americanized misunderstanding of an Eastern concept. Like, they talk about it like power levels in Dragon Ball Z, which makes sense considering this movie was written by a bunch of white people.
I mean, yes, there is some fact of, like, mysticism that is fine to include because it's, you know, part of legends, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you look at movies like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, basically any other Chinese war movie that you've ever seen. I was going to say you have Ip Man about Bruce Lee's instructor, which is a Donnie Yen, like, series of movies. They do epic things. And the general gist of how they do that is ki. And it basically, what it is just kind of this kind of energy or, like, flow, I guess, inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of using your body in the right way, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I could be getting this completely wrong, but, like, it's kind of the thing of, like, take, like, throwing a punch or something. If you throw a punch with just your arm, right? It'll hurt, but it won't be as powerful as it could be. Now, if you use your hips and, like, the rest of your body and basically turn into the punch, it'll do a lot more damage.
Right.
Almost like Bruce Lee's, like, one-inch punch that he was famous for. It's basically kind of a channeling the relationship between all of the parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really magical, but, like,
it's treated as magic in this movie.
And that's fine. Like, that is completely fine. There's no problem with that.
It's a problem.
I mean, it isn't like really. It's basically just like Limitless, the movie. Limitless was a great movie.
I've not seen Limitless.
It's the one where it's basically like 10% of your mind is used. Take a drug, 100%.
Yeah, which is not a real scientific concept.
Exactly. But I don't have a problem with them basically exaggerating ki into, like, this epic thing. Like, it, to me, and I think this is one thing that you miss because I know you don't watch a lot of, like, foreign films. Some of like the Chinese war movies and, like, martial arts movies are just epic for no fucking reason except for to be epic.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like that was something that Mulan didn't go as far as they could have into it. I realized they still had to make it for, of course, the Disney, like, American audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think that you could have made Mulan as a Chinese, like, foreign film with subtitles and just gone full in to the idea of female warrior fighting off the Huns with some crazy kung fu magic. And I still think it would have worked fantastic.
Well, you can still do that. You can still go in that direction without using chi as a plot device the way they did here. Because I do have a problem with how they use it. Again, not talking about chi in Eastern cultures. I'm discussing it as, like, a plot device in this movie. The movie feels like it's going for some analogy between power and womanhood, saying that both Mulan and this witch have been ostracized by these two factors, because these two factors are one the same. But the metaphor feels so muddled. The two traits feel like they have so little in common. Is the movie trying to say that only women can have quote-unquote strong chi? Because if so, that's fucked up. Or are we saying that women don't have strong chi because meaning that women don't have power in their day-to-day lives? The movie wants to be more feminist by saying that Mulan is hiding her power in being a woman, but it ends up putting women in even more of a pocket. Like in the in another moment where her chi is supposed to, like the chi metaphor is muddled, is like when Mulan gets attacked by the witch before like the avalanche battle, whatever, and Mulan starts like shedding her armor after coming to terms with the fact that she needs to be herself, as if the armor is what is making her deceitful and not protecting her from bodily harm. But hey, I guess she doesn't need it because she's got powerful chi or whatever and can bounce around the battlefield like Neo. Because let's not forget, she's not powerful because she went through the effort of training. She's powerful because she was born that way. There's nothing in Mulan's character that makes us care about the effort she puts in or what makes her a strong character, other than like, if you either got it or you don't. That's when the chi becomes a problem, because it's not saying anything positive about her character. It's just saying she was always going to be this good. She never had to try for anything she's doing. She never had to overcome any struggles. And it's like the thing that she takes pride in is also what saves the day, which I guess is what they're kind of going for. But what makes her powerful in her strong chi is nothing special, because she doesn't have to try for it.
I mean, she definitely does have to try for it.
No!
Like, she has to cultivate it and has to stay cultivating it. Like, that's kind of the point, is that, like, she was losing the fight against the witch because she wasn't cultivating her basically, you know, spiritual energy. And, like, also the fact of the key is not just something for women.
No.
It's like, I'm pretty sure Donnie Yen's character also was pretty damn good with it. Because I'm pretty sure Donnie Yen's character was the one that said, hey, you need to work on like cultivating this and like do your tai chi at night, which is how we got that entire montage of her basically cultivating it. And I think that, you know, when she started to balance and, like, focus more on herself and cultivating that energy, that's how she got all the way up that hill. Like, I don't think it's this inner, I don't feel like it's this just, like, inner thing you've just kind of got. Like, I feel like it was more I think it's more just kind of, like, that childlike wonder kind of thing that we see with, like, the childhood Mulan in, like, the prelude. And it's like, ah, yes, child with childlike wonder basically has their soul, knows what they're here, like, in the world for, ki. Like, their spiritual energy is, you know, even, consistent. There's nothing really threatening it. And then it basically goes through this whole self-doubt thing. Like, I don't think that the movie is this whole, like, female empowerment kind of thing. Like, I get that it is about Mulan, who is a female, who is kind of getting held back by this stuff. But I feel like it's more just kind of a general idea of, if you look inside of yourself and basically grapple with all of these, you know, issues that you have, and you can come to terms with them, then you're going to come out stronger in the end. Kind of thing. And I feel like that's more what the movie was about, was more just kind of, because I'm pretty sure they even brought it up of like the line of like, what is my purpose, which again is like a very religious kind of talking point, but I feel like still in that spirituality, that was kind of more the main point of the movie, was basically coming to grips with Mulan's purpose and what she was meant to do. So I feel like it could very easily be seen as like a whole female empowerment thing where Chi is just there for like this magical effect. But I think if you were to look at it more in like a Eastern religion sense, I guess, I feel like it was definitely more of a kind of like religious subtext. At least, I wouldn't say maybe religious subtext, but like a psychological one that just you can't really go that far into in a Disney movie. So I still had no problem with the whole magic and everything. Like, it fit in with what Chinese cinema is usually like. And, you know, these are just things that I've just kind of seen of martial arts through the years. The witch did bug me at first in the movie, but by the end of it, I had kind of understood why they were there. I need to watch it again because the witch is still the biggest letdown in the movie for me, other than the martial arts itself. Like, I feel like we could have just gotten more martial arts. But to be perfectly honest, I don't think I can make a judgment on the witch based off of just one viewing of the movie.
Well, maybe we can do a more in-depth dive at a later point. But for the time being, why don't we jump into the live-action Cinderella. Thoughts on the live-action Cinderella?
Absolute banger.
Yes. Without a doubt, for me, is the best live-action remake.
I'm definitely down to say, at least out of the ones that I have seen, I know there's an argument that the live-action Jungle Book is insanely good.
Fair.
But I have not seen the live-action Jungle Book, so I can't say anything about that. Out of the ones I've seen,
saw it once in theaters.
Cinderella, absolute banger. Lily James, amazing.
Amazing.
Richard Madden without a beard, kind of frightening, but he makes it work.
I'm always there for Richard Madden.
I just found it crazy that he just was clean shaven in this.
Fair. But he's got such a strong jawline.
Very strong jawline. But yeah, there was, I'm trying to think. Because there was, okay, the one thing, the CGI makeup, whatever, covering Helena Bonham Carter before she turned into the fairy godmother. Mm-hmm. Absolutely the worst thing in the movie. Nothing even comes close. Which is saying a lot, because like the makeup wasn't god awful, like film done for like $100,000. Like, it was just a combination of makeup and CGI that kind of told you, yes, it may look okay in this film, but I definitely know how Disney's gonna fuck shit up in later films. And it's by continuing on the CGI trend.
Honestly, I can't complain about anything with anything around Helena Bonham Carter. Helena Bonham Carter sure does. I have a note. Helena Bonham Carter sure does love her character acting, and I sure do love my Helena Bonham Carter. I will take Helena Bonham Carter in any way, shape, or form at any moment.
Look, I'm not saying that I wasn't a huge fan of it. She was still doing great as like a little old hag before she went fairy godmother.
Mm-hmm. You just found the makeup strange.
I'm just saying the look of the hag looked so fake that it just kind of took me out of it for a minute. Also, the other fact, I could not believe that Hayley Atwell was the mom.
I love Hayley Atwell in all regards. It starts on such a strange footing, doesn't it? Hayley Atwell's dyed eyebrows are not fun to look at. The rest of Hayley Atwell, still fun to look at. But the eyebrows should never have been dyed. Eyebrows in general should never be dyed. I choose to believe that Hayley Atwell's character died due to some dyed eyebrow poison disease.
Making Hayley Atwell blonde in that movie did definitely make me look at it and I'm like, this is not fun for me to look at. It just felt so weird because I'm like, I know you as Agent Carter, but like, and you with dyed blonde hair shouldn't look this freaky to me. What else is making it freaky?
it's the eyebrows.
Yeah, I didn't know that the eyebrows were dyed until you just told me, but that makes so much sense now. Also, gotta say, Lily James,
ugh,
perfect, perfect casting.
Perfect casting. Lily James plays tragic kindness wonderfully.
The other thing is I'm glad that Cate Blanchett got to be so mean in this movie.
Ugh. Cate Blanchett, the picture of evil elegance.
Yeah, I was going to say, at least she got one good Disney movie out of her in live action.
Mm-hmm. Well, she had another that was not so good that I'm not thinking of right now.
We're definitely thinking of Thor Ragnarok.
Oh. Are you not a Thor Ragnarok guy? Because I'm not either.
Oh, I think that Taika Waititi was... This is my tangent hot take of the podcast. But I think that Taika Waititi's Thor movies are some of the worst Marvel movies made. And that Taika Waititi's best movie ever made, hot take, is Jojo Rabbit.
It's really good.
Well, a lot of people would say it's What They Do in the Shadows because it spawned so much stuff.
Yeah.
But Jojo Rabbit, masterpiece, but not a live action Disney film.
Not a live action Disney film. Disney haven't touched the Nazis in a while.
I would say animated remake of The Sound of Music.
Ah. Put it in reverse. But yeah. Lily James is such a good Cinderella, or Ella. She's such a good Cinderella. She plays that tragic kindness wonderfully. And I found it neat. Like, not only does this film try to retain the fairy tale style, I like what they did with, instead of having just a terrible controlling relationship between the Cinderella and her stepmother, evil stepmother, Ella is just too kind to deny her stepmother, and that is what puts her on the sort of bottom rung of the family after her father dies.
Yeah, I think that was an interesting way to kind of put it that made it really unique in its own right, was basically this fact of just kind of resolute kindness. Mm-hmm. That she did not want to make any of her family mad, and that kind of made her a slave.
It's not even that she doesn't want to make them mad, it's just that she wants to be good to them. Just wants to be a nice person.
And I think that what stood out to me the most, it was just kind of a giant middle finger, but I knew basically probably gave Miss Tremaine a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Was the fact that as Ella was walking out of the house, she turns to her on the steps at the very end and just says, "I forgive you."
Yeah.
And I'm like,
I mean, yeah.
That is the biggest middle finger to somebody that's been so mean to you.
That's a way to put it.
I mean,
I feel like you could see it as a middle finger, like her taking one actual jab at her. I feel like you'd also see it as like forcing the kindness, like being resolutely kind, like refusing to give in to the hate that she has been fed.
Well, I guess that is kind of the reason I see it as a middle finger, because it's kind of this, you couldn't change denial. Me.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I was still able to come out as kind and as courageous of a person as I could be.
Fuck you with kindness.
Yeah, so I really like that. Also, something that I don't think was in the original movie. The relationship between Prince Charming
or
Kit in this.
Kit.
And his dad.
Yeah, I did find it hilarious that Richard Madden's character is named Kit, like Kit Harington from Game of Thrones, and they're both in Game of Thrones.
That was pretty funny.
It's not a joke. It's not a reference for you, but it's for me.
No, I understood that reference when it came. I'm like, hold on, you don't look anything like Jon Snow.
Wait a minute.
But I really liked the moments between the king and the prince.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I felt like
always a joy. Always a joy to see Derek Jacobi in anything.
Yeah, I felt like it really kind of brought up, again, kind of that dynamic character development that wasn't in the animation. but just even in the brief moments we're there, kind of followed just a quick, you know, action, consequence, change kind of thing. Because I really think, like, the clearest story beats I saw was, Dad, don't marry for love, marry a princess.
Mm-hmm.
Ball happens. Before she runs away, she stops the king and says, your son Kit is amazing. I was going to say, he's such, like, a brave and courageous person. You raised him well.
Mm-hmm.
And then runs away, and then afterwards he's like, marry for love.
Yeah, oh, when he fucking dies, it's such a sad scene, but a nice scene, because fucking leave it to Derek Jacobi and Richard Madden to show real, genuine, touching, masculine love, which I feel like plays into just the overall theme of kindness in the film, and, like, kindness winning out, and, like, the evil stepmother not, you know, not winning because of the strength she tries to flex, the strength and control she tries to flex on Ella. Ella ends up winning because her kindness connects to the kindness of Kit.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's kind of the thing, is that watching Cinderella kind of reminded me of watching Top Gun Maverick.
I've not seen Top Gun Maverick.
Just basically think it's pretty close to the original Top Gun movie, but there's just an amount of nostalgia and, like, America, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That just kind of makes you just kind of cry, because you're just like, this is just straight up hits you in the feels, kind of just a good movie. And it hits you in the feels not because it's, like, sad or, like, anything profound happens, just because it is a genuinely happy movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that that is something that Cinderella just had on every other movie, is like that live action remake was just genuinely happy. Like, it definitely had, like, its trials that the main characters had to go through. It had somewhat dark moments because of Kate Blanchett, which I cannot agree with enough, the fact that she was probably perfect casting for someone that evil.
Yes, without a doubt.
But I was gonna say, by the end of it, that movie was just pure joy and kindness. Mm-hmm. Like, the message never wavered. It just kind of...
It's such a simple thing, but it's so nice.
And to that, did the live-action Cinderella need to be made? No, of course not.
No.
Did any of these live-action remakes need to get made? No, of course not. But the live-action Cinderella one...
Kills it.
Just kind of punched you in the face with... just this overall be kind, be courageous message.
Mm-hmm.
And it really just brought you back to just, like, feeling a kid and saying, I wish we were kind of all kids again. Or just overall living in this fairy tale world. Like, it was the most Disney movie, I think, that Disney had released in decades.
I think so. I think that is a very fair approximation.
Also, I do have to point out that Thor, the first Thor movie, directed by Kenneth Branagh, the live-action Cinderella movie, also directed by Kenneth Branagh.
Is it Kenneth Branagh?
It is directed by Kenneth Branagh. Disney, I think that you should kind of come away from Jon Favreau for certain series and remakes. I don't think we have time today, but we will bring up The Lion King and how much I want to erase that completely. But hire Kenneth Branagh for more movies, and whoever the writers were of that Cinderella, of course. But, like, that's your dream team for these remakes. Just get the Cinderella team back together.
Mm-hmm. Learn the right lessons. But with just, like, a last few notes that I wanted to give for this movie before we move on is, I did get a strange amount of entertainment from hearing Lily James call the cat Lucifer with such love and joy.
That was pretty amazing. I also just love the name Gus Gus. Like,
Gus Gus. I love the mice. The mice are great.
The mice were great.
Again, retains that fairy tale style without not getting distracted by it. Again, always loved seeing Derek Jacobi in anything. What else? This movie does bring up like very slight like political ideas of how of needing a political arranged marriage type of stuff, but it works here because it's more in support of the relationship between Kit and his dad. So that's nice. That's a proper way to bring in any politicalization of a story.
I will point out one slight negative fact. Everything was a perfect casting, except for maybe the power of the Skarsgård.
I didn't expect to see Skarsgård in there. I didn't mind him.
I'm not sure if he was the best person for it. I don't think he took anything away from the movie, but I don't think him being the actor for that role also added anything.
I liked his mustache.
Okay, the mustache was good.
But I thought the pumpkin carriage scene is one example of how this film actually puts thought into how stuff is executed, as opposed to the other movies that just like that just putting it in would because it feels like whatever element of the story feels like it needs to be there. The dress transformation is also wonderful and fun and magical and sweet, and I love it. I like how much of a little freak that Mr. Lizard is.
The lizard and the goose were great.
Great. I love them. Give the goose back his funny hat. Needed to note that. The first dance at the ball goes on for a moment but never loses my interest. After the ball, the carriage chase is a fun bit of action. Yeah, this is one movie that I would return to after the fact. I really like it.
I did not expect, because I will say this was not the first live-action remake that I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
I did not expect it to be such a solid film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was good, but I also liked Mulan. I liked Aladdin. But this one was just solid. Like, this was, to me, the epitome of what a Disney live-action remake should be.
Yeah.
And, yeah. If I had any advice for Disney, I'd probably say...
Talk to Kenneth.
If it involves, you know, more than, like, 5 or 6 animals, don't make a live-action remake. If you really want to try it, talk to Kenneth.
I would talk to Kenneth.
Yeah. Kenneth Branagh, if you are listening to this and ever want to come on and just talk about all of the different movies that you've made.
Anything, and, really.
You know, just talk to us about how epic making Cinderella or the first Thor movie was. Come on. We'd love to have you.
Talk about your movies. Talk about Shakespeare. We'll listen to anything you have to say.
Oh, yeah. All of the 90s Shakespeare movies that you made, we could also have an entire interview episode dedicated to that. Love those movies. But you're our guy, Kenneth.
Well, before we wrap up this episode, I figured we could end with Cole. Overall, I think we've already kind of stated it with the question of did these need to happen? But, I mean, were these movies worth it, really?
Out of the three that we discussed,
mm-hmm.
I would say that they were worth it. I would say that they each had unique moments that made it enjoyable to see a live-action difference. For the eventual part two that I know we'll have to make, it pains me to say that any of the other movies I know of are worth it.
Well...
Because I really think that we chose at least 3 out of the top 5, if not the top 3 today.
Mm-hmm. I think we'd have chosen the number 1.
Oh yeah, no, we chose the number 1. The only movies that we may not have chosen that I think are in my top 5 would be The Jungle Book. And I know most people don't know about this one, sleeper film, Pete's Dragon.
Mm.
But yeah, I am weary about the eventual part 2, because then we'll have to talk about the dark side of these Disney remakes.
Yeah, there's a dark side to it, because I can tell you for certain, regardless of whatever critiques we might have, Disney will keep making them based on box office success that they have seen so far, considering Cinderella on a budget of $95 million, made $543.5 million. Mulan as the only notable failure.
COVID
on a budget of COVID for sure. On a budget of $200 million, made a box office of $69.9 million. Nice. Aladdin on a budget of $183 million made a box office of $1.054 billion. Lilo and Stitch on a budget of $100 million made $1.038 billion. Beauty and the Beast on a budget of anywhere between $160 to $255 million, bit of a gap there, made a box office of $1.266 billion. And we could go on with Lion King and Dumbo and Alice in Wonderland, Jungle Book, etc., all turning massive profits. So yeah, none of these live actions are not going to stop anytime soon.
First of all, how dare you put the Alice in Wonderland ones into Disney live action remakes?
Those
were something twisted and completely Johnny Depp outside of this realm. I think that Cinderella is the first Disney live-action remake that I think really starts out the string. Because I want to say the first three were Cinderella, Peach Dragon, and then The Jungle Book. Because, like...
I don't know when Peach Dragon
Alice in Wonderland was, like, a 2009-2010 movie.
2010.
Yeah,
that's, Peach Dragon came out in 2016.
And Cinderella was 2015.
2015, yeah.
Yeah, so I really don't think that you can say that Alice in Wonderland counts as a Disney live-action remake.
Well, it is. Even if it's got Tim Burton's fingers all over it, it's still a live-action remake.
I will not count it as such. But yeah, no. Disney, I think the biggest advice that I can give them is either add important plot points if you want to maintain the same vibe, or just completely abandon the vibe. And make something just off kilter and just completely change it and go full force into it. Because I think that's where their strengths lie. I don't have a lot of hope for this Moana movie strictly because of that. I don't think they're going to change enough in the movie or add enough to make this live action remake actually worth making.
Well, Disney, we know you're hanging on our every word and every bit of us we offer, so keep that in mind as we move forward. But, Cole, would you like to move forward with wrapping us up?
Any last words, Ken?
None that we haven't said, none that we won't have for the sequel, I guess, for more movies, more live-action remakes.
All right, then. Well, I am Cole Browning.
I'm Kevin MacArthur.
And this has been Unquestionably Nerdy. See ya.
Let's see, I did a mythology episode, and then I did a Game of Thrones episode, and then I did an Avatar Last Airbender episode. And I made jokes about you being dead in all three.